This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am Hubert Edwards and you are listening to The Essentials, The Reset. This evening we're going to have ourselves a conversation around taxation, the taxation debate as reignited. And as we get into the Christmas season, as we get into 2022, as we get into the second half of the fiscal year 21-22, I believe that there are some important issues which need to be discussed. Now, there are discussions taking place. There are different individuals who are sharing their views and their thoughts. The question is, are those discussions broad enough? Are we narrowing the conversations too early? Are we having the right discussion? I'm not proposing by any means that this one is going to be the right discussion. But I have some views and we wish to share those. We want to have a guided conversation, definitely want to hear from you. Now, I know that this whole idea of taxation is not necessarily the sexiest discussion around. As a matter of fact, we seem to try as hard as possible to avoid talking about taxation. And when we do, it's usually narrowed to, well, we don't want income tax, we don't want increase in taxes, and that's the end of that. But the question is that sustainable? Is that sufficient? Is that a deep enough way of looking at the issue which I think carries such significant national impact? As we look at the newspaper, we see government should use vaccine to increase coverage. That's what PAHO is saying. So rather than give persons booster, why don't you increase the coverage? Because shots, they say, are only needed for immunocompromised individuals. Miss Bahamas Universe welcomed home a beautiful young lady sitting on the top of a car, and Miss Chantel O'Brien, who demonstrated her ability to play on the world stage. She represented the Bahamas well. She created a bit of a stir, I think, locally at home here when she placed in the top 10 for the first time in the history of the Bahamas, participating in these pageants, and it caused for a nice bit of debate. But against that backdrop, it was simply she doing her best and putting her best foot forward and representing the country at a very high level. She's to be congratulated. Her parents, all her handlers, all the persons who were responsible for getting her there are to be congratulated. Digital Transformation Unit touts successful My Gateway platform. Last night, I was privileged to be in a meeting and we had a bit of a walkthrough of this and some discussions around it. Wonderful, wonderful, seemingly seamless type of operation developing here, and the number of services, I think over 200 services targeted for this platform, and we want to say, big congratulations to all those who are working on it. Want to give a shout out to Mr. Michael Hamilton, who is one of the leaders over there. He was one of the presenters last night, and I think Mr. Curry, well presented. We see here Bahiman Fred Purpall joins FedEx Board of Director, one of those in the diaspora who is doing some great things. Want to congratulate all of those persons who are moving up, getting their just reward for hard work done. The Great Return Airport to be swamped with our arrival of 6,000 passengers come this Saturday. Carnival left to wait on the approval decision. We understand, based on the news floating around, that approval isn't going to be here. And so, you know, that's another twist in that particular saga. Bahamas provide a probe on $77 million security fraud. Nassau Airport's loss up eightfold to $37.4 million. And BOB to expand branch network, going against the tide when other banks are actually reducing. $245 million NAD debt. No further relief is required. And that comes over the head of Ms. Vernice Walken, who is the CEO there, the managing director at NAD. And so, yeah, there's a lot of things which are happening in the Bahamas, throughout the Bahamas, and all the way across the world. And if we look at those things, we will see, you know, that we have some ways to go in getting back to where we are. But the truth is, the objective truth is that there are so many green shoots, and the comeback seemingly is going to be very buoyant, subject to the impact of this COVID variant. And so, you know, we just want to keep our fingers crossed. We want to be praying, be hoping, be willing that this situation will continue to strengthen. Now, I wrote an article, and it was published in both newspapers. One newspaper kind of put a twist on the headline that I suggested, and it says, "Reigniting the Debate on Bahamian Taxation." And that's what I want to talk about today. We have seen, against the backdrop of the IMF making some proposals to the previous administration, and recently discussed and debated across the divide, political divide, the IMF is saying, hey, you know, this minimum 15% tax, you need to take a serious look at it. You need to look at taxing corporation, especially high network corporation and high network individuals. We know that the U.S. has pushed and secured the support of pretty much the entire world, G7, G20, on this minimum 15% taxation, corporation tax. We also appreciate the fact that the Bahamas does not play very, very largely in that neck of the woods as far as the multinational corporations are concerned. Yeah, we may have some connections and some spin-off, spillover as a result in our wealth management segment. But we are not big in those sectors like a Cayman or a Bermuda. The reality, though, is, and this was a point made by Mr. Gowon Bo in a recent interview, be careful that we do not underestimate this as a dress rehearsal for the future. It could very well be. One of the things that we've come to appreciate about the OECD, US, IMF, IRS initiatives is that since 2003, or even before that, since 1999, most of the initiatives that they have been putting forward year after year, shifting the goalposts, as we like to say, not creating a level playing field, the one thing which has been certain is that they have become more clinical, they have become more pointed, they have become more potent, and they have become more deliberate. In each iteration, they have been improving on what it is that they are putting forward. And in many instances, we see that the routes of escape have been becoming more narrow. And so effectively, they're kind of painting us into a corner. So at the end of the day, at the end of the day, where are we with this taxation issue? Now, if you were following the news, the newspaper, you would have seen a series of articles carried in the Tribune last week. And in that, there was a discussion or interview with the former Minister of State for Finance, Mr. James Smith, and also a interview with Gowon Bo. And Gowon Bo was saying, basically, this issue of corporation tax, the writing is on the wall. Mr. Smith, on the other hand, was saying, do not allow the IMF to drag us down this road. They can't drag us down this income tax road. Now, both men, as most persons here in the Bahamas know, are very influential, well-respected commentators on these issues. And so they laid out their case. I just wanted to take a different path, maybe, to the conversation. And I'm saying, let's forget IMF. Let's forget the EU. Let's forget the US. Let's forget every single external entity for the time being who may be pushing an initiative which is separate and apart from anything that we're dealing with locally. And let's talk about our tax from an internal perspective. So we have a situation where in the Bahamas, our tax regime is largely seen as being regressive. And it's regressive compared to a progressive taxation system, largely because it's based on consumption. And consumption taxation usually takes out more revenue, more tax from an individual who earns less. So an individual who is on minimum wage and make $200 per week and spends $180 out of that for food is going to be charged 10 or 12% of that on tax, in terms of taxes, income tax, not income tax, value-added tax, consumer tax. A similar individual who makes $1,000 spends, say, $400 on food or other services and pays tax on 40% of their income. The whole idea here is that the individual proportionately, not absolutely, but proportionately, the individual who makes more is paying less as a proportion of their total income on tax. And so a progressive taxation system which says the more you earn, the more you can earn, the more money you make, the more you should pay. And there are thresholds and there are exemptions and there are all of that sort of good stuff to ensure that person are not just paying out the total amount of their salaries back to government. And so that is deemed as being more progressive. But when we here in the Bahamas start to talk about taxation, we often say, well, you know, nothing is wrong with a regressive tax system. Or some persons say, we need a more progressive tax system. Now, there is truth in between all of those. Yes, we may need to be a little bit more progressive. One of the things which I cannot appreciate too well is when we take a regressive tax system and say we are doing some things with it to make it more progressive. It doesn't work. Ultimately, it does not work. A regressive tax system is going to be regressive largely because, by its nature, it is going to take out a larger chunk, proportionately, of an individual who earns money at the lower end of the spectrum than one who earns higher. That's really the classic definition. So tinkering with a regressive tax system is not going to make it any more progressive. Ultimately, it's not going to be the most equitable thing on the face of the earth as far as taxation is concerned. The progressive tax has the ability to do that. But does that mean that a progressive tax system is a perfect tax system, is the best tax system for the Bahamas? Absolutely not, because it comes with a number of important vagaries. But let's talk about what it is that we need here in the Bahamas. If we understand from an internal perspective that we have certain obligations, then we now need to start to assess whether or not there is sufficient headroom in the Bahamas, taxable capacity, my word, my term, such that if there was a need to increase taxes, it could be done. And it seems like, based on my research, I went back to a report done by the IMF, which was done when there was the preparation for the launch of VAT. And at that time, it was said that the Bahamas was only using approximately 40% of its tax capacity. So on a scale of 1 to 10, the Bahamas was at a 4, which means that it had the ability to go up 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There was more room available which was not used than that which was used. 4%, 40% compared to 60% unused. It also, the point was also made that when compared with 98 other countries, the Bahamas was ranked 92 in terms of its tax effort. So basically, the effort to collect taxes, to increase taxes, to gain more revenue for the government coffers, the extent to which that was done, when you take 98 countries, there's one country that does that absolutely well. And there's one other country at number 98 that didn't do that very, very well. And the Bahamas was about 6 away from that bottom country. So it says to us, at the end of the day, that the Bahamas has significant capacity for increasing its taxes. Now, again, we're not saying go increase taxes. This is not what I'm saying. I want to understand, because oftentimes I think we narrow the conversation too quickly. So don't say, Edward, say go and raise taxes. I'm saying to you, if the consideration should be made that that is the direction that we need to go, there is great capacity available. There is headroom available, and that headroom is currently unused. But here is where, for me, the argument turns, and turns fundamentally inward, so that we can stop talking about the IMF and the OECD. Let's look at our own situation from an internal perspective. The way we are going to broaden the conversation is, we're not going to say, well, we are not going to do income tax. So we just take, say, no income tax, and that's the end of that. Because we may not necessarily need income tax. The argument really is fundamentally, in the first instance, do we need additional revenue? That's the big question to be asked. Does the government need additional revenue? And it would seem from all analysis, don't even have to jump deep into the numbers, that the answer to that is a big yes. So if the government needs additional revenue, then the question is, where will it get it from, and how will it receive or gain that revenue from the taxpayer? So we are arguing, therefore, on one of these attendant principles to taxation, and that is the principle of sufficiency. Is the revenue sufficient to meet the economic objective of the government? So let's look at something very quickly. In the 2022 budget presentation, we saw that projected 21-22, the projected revenue was $2,244,000,000. That was projected revenue. And projected expenditure was $3.2 billion. So you have revenue of 2.2 and expenditure of 3.2. So without even being an individual who understands the fundamentals of taxation, and I'm not proposing that I do, I just read some things and understand it a bit, but not even by not being an economist who is deeply steeped in the understanding of the way the country works and so on and so forth, just by simply algebra, mathematics, 1, 2, 3, we see that we have a projected total revenue of $2.2 billion an expenditure of 3.2. It means that somewhere along the line, $1 billion is missing, isn't it? And where does the 2.2 come from? Where is the 2.2 expected to come from? Well, it comes from taxes. And the missing $1 billion, where will that come from? Well, in the ordinary course of things, if you are going to spend within the currency of a year, that $1 billion or so, I think, in precise numbers, it was $951 million. So let me not overstate it and get the numbers too large. But in real terms, that is usually secured by borrowing. So the question is, if we are borrowing based on deficit spending, one of the ways of eliminating that deficit in the first instance is to secure enough revenue on the taxation side such that you don't need to borrow because you have a deficit. So in this instance, the government has demonstrated that it needs $3.2 billion for its expenditure, recurrent expenditure and capital expenditure. If it needs $3.2 billion, why then, therefore, is the government not putting tax at the level to secure $3.2 billion in revenue? I think that is the starting point. So before we get to this old idea that the IMF is pushing us to do a thing or some other entity, we need to start to think about what it is that we are doing within our economic arrangements in the first instance. Should it not be a case where, well, if we can't get revenues to cover the 3.2, then we should be cutting expenditure. So that would be one thing to do. Reduce expenditure. Of course, it will have the attendant impact of reducing the goods and services which government can provide. But that's something that we need to think about. I want you to consider this. That in most instances, we have run a perennial deficit. I have said, I usually go back at least two decades. Recently, I was on an interview and with Gowan Bo, actually, and he stated, well, we have done this since independence. So if every single year we have run a deficit, it means that in every single year since independence, the government has not collected sufficient revenue to cover its expenses, ultimately. And in one instance, it's going to be projected revenue, and then in the other instance, it's going to be the amount which has been absolutely collected. And the absolute amount collected is usually less than the amount projected. But before we get to the final amount collected, we are already in a deficit position. We are projecting consistently deficits. So when you think about the level of revenue to GDP which the government has been working with over recent times, in 2016, 2017, that has been 17%. 2017-18, 16.2%. 2018-19, 18.7%. The following year is 18.1%. 2021, it was 15.3%. And we understand that this was we have to put that into context. This was a year when we really got beat up from COVID. 2020-21, I said 15.3%. And in 2021-2022, it's expected to be 18.2%. That is the amount of revenue as a percentage of the overall economy, GDP. Now, when you think about that in terms of even the recent pronouncement by the Prime Minister and the Minister of Economic Affairs, which says our taxation should really be at a level of about 25%. And we are operating right now at 7% below that benchmark. It tells you, therefore, that something is wrong on the other side. Long before we factor in any pilferages or persons collecting some of the money and running off with it, whatsoever other things may happen in between the actual budgeting and the actual collection, even before those things could become a possibility, we are already 7% down. The question, therefore, for us, ladies and gentlemen, everyone listening, is why are we worried about the IMF? Why are we worried about the EU? Why are we worried about the United States and its minimum 15% corporation tax? Except that, to the extent that those initiatives hold very, very important implications for our financial services sector. And as you know, we have an economy which is basically on two legs, tourism and financial services. We have seen the vulnerability in tourism. We have gotten beaten up. We know that the virus thing is not over. And there is this potential, as they've been warning, to be there for there to be a surge. But on a strategic basis, on a strategic level, the 15% minimum corporation tax may hold some implications for the competitiveness of the country and its financial services industry. It could mean that persons may make a decision to move away. We don't know. It could be an advantage also, because from my perspective, I would think that this is an opportunity for us to say, here is a market out there of multinational corporations. We need to go at that market so that we can gain some. And there is, too, the opportunity for us to gain taxes in the digital space from the likes of Facebook and Amazon and all of those other entities. So there's some monies out there on the table, but there's also some strategic competitive implication if we totally ignore it. But for the time being, for the purpose of my argument, I'm saying to you, let's leave them aside for a second. And let's understand that without them, because oftentimes when we put the them in the conversation, it clouds it. And we tend to believe, many persons tend to believe, that we have been forced to do a thing. When in fact, the writing on the wall, the true writing on the wall, is that our tax base, the amount of tax revenue that we collect in the first instance, is insufficient to move us forward. So I outlined to you what our deficit looked like in terms of the revenue. So how do we broaden this conversation? How do we move from the point where we are at right now, where we seem to, you know, some one person on one side saying A, the other one saying B? How do we get to the place where we are going to find some sort of a common ground, some consensus? First of all, we have to start out with this conversation by not being emotional. Emotions are just really not going to help us at this point in time. We have to be willing to be open to the possibilities. So we can't go into the conversation saying absolutely no income tax, or we need to raise VAT or not raise VAT or reduce VAT. It is a conversation which really is demanding a discussion around broad-based reform, not an abstract discussion on one or two aspects of the idea of taxation, but a fundamental and deeply rooted conversation in what does reform for the Bahamas looks like as far as taxation is concerned. That's basically what it is, or that's basically where it is supposed to be. We must be willing to consider all of the possibilities. Because guess what? If you take my argument earlier, if you accept my argument earlier, then VAT should be something like maybe 15, 17, 18% to help make up that. VAT is where the government gets the most of its revenue from. Currently doing about 800 and something million at 12%, yeah? We have a deficit of 951 million that was projected. So let's do some fuzzy maths right now. If 12% before it was reduced, if 12% gets you 800,000, if you double that, yeah, to 24%, it will get you 1.6, which is an additional 800,000, which would be still less than the 951 million, which is needed to close the deficit. You see where I'm going? So the argument that can be made is that VAT should be higher. Other taxes should be higher. But is that really and truly the way to go? Or is it a case where the Bahamas need to have a very, very serious look at its tax reforms, at reforms of the civil service, reforms around fiscal responsibility, reforms around energy and spending, reforms around how do you do this facilitative thing for the economy, reforms around debt and debt management? Where is that conversation which brings and find the middle ground such that one on one side we don't say, okay, it's an increase in tax which is needed, or on the other side it's a dramatic decrease in expenditure which is required? Because there are implications, serious implications in between if we take this knee-jerk response that, hey, give me tax, give me income tax. Because believe me, income tax is not an easy monster. You think VAT is bad? From a government perspective, one of the principles of taxation is certainty. We need to be very certain about what the tax is, what we're paying, how much it is, how much we're going to calculate. And therefore, the government will make projections on that. Income tax have so many, just by its nature, will come with the ability to bob and weave and avoid. And in the world of taxation, avoidance is a legal and allowable concept. Evasion is what is wrong. So when you have a tax of X amount to pay, and you evade that tax, then you commit a criminal liability. When you have the potential to pay taxes, and you use a legal mechanism such as you take a deduction. So let's say, for example, I am a company and I'm going to make a profit of $100,000 for the year. But if I make $100,000, I am going to be in the top bracket. They're usually in taxation, there are brackets and different level pay different amount of taxes. If the next bracket down is, say, $70,000, right, then I am now starting to think, why am I going to pay the government a whole ton of tax when I can use, say, $30,000, advertise, sponsor, do some PR, which is a legal deductible, and get my income below $70,000. I then pay a lower amount of tax, but I have gained strategic advantage for my business by marketing more but making less profit. It suits me in this instance to make less profit, but guess what? The government then receives less taxes. I may decide, for example, well, you know, I have one company which is doing certain number of business or certain business lines. And some of these companies are, you know, some of the business lines are not that buoyant. So let me create multiple companies, farm that out, and knowing very well that some of these companies are going to make losses perennially. And then as a group, in terms of group financial planning, I use the losses from one company or the other company to write off or underwrite the profits from these other companies. And therefore, I may end up paying no taxes. We hear very often of talk like persons like Amazon and these big companies that make billions and billions of dollars that end up paying no taxes. Why? Because they employ experienced tax lawyers, experienced tax experts, and they find ways of finding deductions and loopholes so that no tax is paid. A taxation system like VAT or consumption tax kind of guard you or protects you from a a lot of those issues. So the whole idea of saying, hey, let's go progressive, let's go income tax, let's go corporation tax, is not the end all of the conversation. But the conversation must start with what is needed for the government to function effectively. What is needed such that we don't perennially run deficits because there is a cost added to that? What exactly is needed? I'm going to invite you to join me on the other side of the conversation of the break. If you have some thoughts on this, definitely would love to hear from you. You can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or the text line is 422-4796. On the other side, we're going to ask the question, what exactly is the purpose of taxation? What is the purpose of taxation? And is there a cost to having a low taxation regime in the first instance? And how might that cost us further down the line? You're listening to The Essentials on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. Don't move. Come right back.
It's a simple act of kindness with you, me, and RBC.
RBC wants to spread acts of kindness during this festive season. One simple act of kindness for our friends, co-workers, and communities can cause the brightest smile. Help a stranger, give a food basket, or call an elderly person. Share your stories at facebook.com/RBC Caribbean.
Acts of kindness, RBC.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
In a year when hugs and happy smiles have been few and far between, Fresh Market knows just how important this holiday season is to everyone. We've made our list, we've checked them twice, all to ensure that your holiday meals are filled with fresh and delicious ingredients. Our produce departments are brimming with seasonal favorites, our delis and bakeries are filled with holiday sweets and treats, and our grocery aisles are stocked with all your favorite essentials. It's the best time of the year, and we're giving you fresh for the holidays.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
And welcome back to The Essentials on Guardian Radio 96.9. This is The Essentials, The Reset. We're having a conversation, well, so far as I'm talking and you're listening, but we're talking about this issue of taxation and the way we should look at it. And I believe that it's best for us to look from an internal perspective, because that internal perspective, I think, is more fundamental, more instructive than taking a view that the IMF or OECD or EU or the United States is imposing a thing on us. So it's like me coming to you and saying, well, I think you need some food. You know, here is some food. Take it. As opposed to you becoming acutely aware of how hungry you are and therefore set out to secure food for yourself. But there's some fundamental difference in those two give and take. In that I am going to be imposing on you the food, chances are the food that I have. Very likely the food I have is the food that I like, but you may have absolutely no appetite for it. If that transaction was to be completed, you may end up with a situation which doesn't necessarily suit you. Yeah, you may be filled for a while because you didn't even realize that you were hungry, but you were. But so it may fill you for a while, but it may cause problems later on. Let's say, for example, there is a particular ingredient in that food to which you're allergic to. That is going to cause you a problem. Now, when you become aware of your hunger, your own personal hunger, and you set out intentionally, deliberately, and carefully to satisfy that hunger, you, knowing what your circumstances, knowing the things that you like, knowing the things that you can have, and the things that you should not have, you're going to be way, way more effective in creating satisfaction for self as opposed to what I could do for you by imposing that meal on you. And so when we ask the question, what exactly is the primary goal of a taxation system? It is, very fundamentally, the primary goal of a national tax system is to generate revenue to pay for the expenditure of government at all levels, is to generate revenue to pay for expenditures of government at all levels. Therefore, if the government have expenditure of $3.2 billion, but only projecting revenue of $2.2 billion, it means that the tax system, the tax regime is not generating sufficient revenue. Isn't that the case? And the question, therefore, is, from that perspective, internally, we now need to solve this. This is the analogy of you being hungry and recognizing your own hunger. You becoming aware of where you need to be filled. So when we look at this whole idea, therefore, of a low tax on the domestic side, let's forget for a little bit about the external side. We know that low tax or no tax brings a certain value proposition to the Bahamas, which is largely one of the biggest drivers in financial services and other in foreign direct investment. It brings a level of attractiveness in that regard. But let's look at the low tax situation from a domestic perspective, from your perspective and my perspective. So when we have a low tax, meaning that the amount of tax that we are paying, I'm not proposing whether it's income tax or corporation tax or any type of tax, just low in absolute terms. The country has a demand for $100,000 in taxes. And our collective taxes can only provide, say, $80,000. So we are paying, in this instance, this is the definition of low tax which I'm using, we're paying taxes below the natural demand based on the expenditure, the services, and infrastructure the government desire to provide for the country. So this is what happens. When that scenario comes up, we run deficits. Immediately we run deficits. And in order to fill the gap of the deficit, we then will have to borrow. And that borrowing results in debt. Over time, the debt increases, it builds up, and it gets to the point where you have a critical mass like what we have right now, where our debt to GDP is maybe 100, 104. It depends on which day you look at it. It may be slightly below 100 or slightly above 100%. As a result of the debt building up, we have increased in interest costs Because if you borrow people money, then you're expected to pay them for the use of the money. That's the rent you pay, the interest, the rent you pay to use the money in the first instance. So here is what happens. You run a deficit, then you create debt. As a result of having the debt, you now need to pay interest. And that interest takes out a portion of the revenue you had in the first instance, which was inadequate. Initially, it starts out small, and then you get to the place where it's now a significant amount. So when we talk about the $2.2 billion in revenue that the government had in the first instance, check this out. Of the $2.2 billion in revenue, $512 million of that was supposed to be targeted at interest payments. My fuzzy math says 2.2, 500,000 is nearly around 20%, but somewhere around 18%. 18% of your total revenue. The revenue, which was already short by $1 billion, you will now need to take out $500 million to pay for interest. It gets worse as you build up debt, and like the Bahamas is right now at a place where the debt is very high. It was $512 million. And that $512 was on the basis of where we were before the downgrade by Moody's. And downgrades, by their nature, says your credit risk is poorer, and therefore you are likely to pay greater interest. Lenders are likely to charge you greater interest. So we can expect, all things being equal, for the interest bill to increase, which means that more of the revenue is going towards paying for the debt. So here is part of the trap when you have this low interest rate or low taxation situation. What does that mean? If you're paying more on interest, more of your money is just going to pay because you have the man money. Then when you end up with a situation where you have poor infrastructure, where schools need to be rebuilt, where roads need to be patched, where your electrification grid is ineffective or inefficient, where there needs to be upgrade to certain government services, your ability to do that becomes less. Because when you look at the budget, the current budget that we're working with, when you look at the budget, the capital expenditure is $300+ million. $300+ million, a lot of money. Certainly, if that was my money, I would say I have a lot of money. But when we look at it within the context of debt and interest, we are paying more on the interest payment than we are planning to spend on capital expenditure. In a cycle like that, the expectation therefore must be that we are going to enjoy, at least for some time, infrastructure which is not at its optimal best. If the infrastructure is currently in a poor state now, and I'm not saying it is, I'm saying if it is, we can expect it to remain like that or get worse over time, because you do not now have the capacity to spend significantly in that era. Now, this is only because me and you just not paying all of the taxes needed for the revenue. And this is before the government puts itself in a position where we can lament that you're not using the money too right, you're losing the money, some persons may be thieving some of the money. That's well before that. This is just projection. At projection, we are projected to pay less than is actually needed. When you have poor infrastructure, when you have a situation where the government is not able to spend on infrastructure, which is facilitative, you're likely to have low or no growth. In the circumstances that we are seeing ourselves having very low growth over the last decade or maybe even more, averaging at 1% or less, we can understand exactly where we are as a country and the impact that not paying sufficient tax can have ultimately on the outcome of the country. So you're going to end up with a situation where there is limited government service or poor government service. There's reduced productive capacity in the money that the government earns in terms of taxation, because a large portion is going to go out to pay interest on debt. And as a result of that, the country is going to be unable or limited in its ability to secure the level of resiliency which is needed and which is much talk about going forward. And if that resiliency cannot be secured, if that resiliency cannot be secured, then obviously the country then becomes even more vulnerable to external shocks, and shocks from weather events, climate events, big hurricanes. So what is the picture I'm trying to paint here for you? Is that there is a vicious cycle. There is a vicious cycle in an under-provision for taxation. So in many instances, we look at it and say, we do not want to pay more tax. I don't want to pay any more tax. I'll tell you that straight up. But that's the emotion in me speaking, right? That's the selfish me which is speaking. I know that. And I know in my heart of heart, if I can get to the place where I don't have to pay more taxes, then certainly I won't. I don't want that. But within the context of the country, within the broad context of the country, we must accept and we must understand that our collective position as an impact ultimately on the state of the economy. So over these many years, the country has done pretty well, yeah? The Bahamas is a hyper capita income country. Persons have thrived, many industries have thrived. But if viewed through the lens of consistent deficits every single year since independence, if viewed through that lens, then we now start to understand that maybe the revenue, the tax revenue, has never been sufficient. And where we are today and the standard of living that we enjoy today or enjoyed in the past is as a result of being mortgaged into the future. So the $9 or $10 billion in national debt, which currently exists, attracting $500 million in interest payment each year out of a total revenue of less than $3 billion. $3 billion being the normative, my observed normative expenditure amounts, is effectively mortgaging the future of the country in a very serious way. We're taking out a big $10 billion mortgage on everything which has been done up to now to facilitate all that has been achieved and enjoyed up to now, and we'll have to pay for it in the future. That's basically what it is. If you have the big fancy house, the one you can't afford, or the one you struggle to afford, because you took out a $1 million mortgage, which you now, looking at you are going to have to pay that, and you're going to make sure you will this to your children so that they can take up the payments, because there's no way you can finish it. That is part and parcel of what is happening here, because the expenditure maybe should have been, you know, a $500,000 house, and you would have been fine. But because you went to $1 billion, it requires you to put the revenue that you have under such strain that you will never ever get out of that loop. So when I say to you, let's not think about the IMF, let's not think about the EU, let's not think about the United States, let's think about where we are as a country in terms of our honest, truthful economics realities. If somebody is not willing to either pay more or be willing to not gain more on the service side, then something will break. The tension there isn't that it can be pulled in a opposite direction forever, infinitely. At some point in time, it will break. So when you look at it from this internal perspective, we should be informed by the existence of the debt. We should be informed by the narrowness of our revenue, which is averaging somewhere around 18% or so, but certainly less than 20%, and definitely much less than the 25% desired by persons in the know within the current administration. And even before they made those pronouncements, we generally understand, persons who follow this generally understand that the Bahamas has always lagged Caribbean counterparts in terms of its revenue to GDP. And I think somewhere out there, somewhere in the back of my mind, something rests that, you know, that number of 25 has always been kind of like a sweet spot for the Bahamas. And I went back and I did a little bit of a mathematics looking at 25%. And even at 25%, it does not erode totally a deficit just based on current numbers. It's close, but it would not totally erode the deficit. It therefore means that we have to be informed by the impact of the repayment of our interest, and the fact that the more interest you pay, the more it takes out capacity, investment capacity, spending capacity to buy goods and services which are needed to fuel future growth. Because ultimately, the best scenario for the Bahamas is an expansion in the economy such that 10% of value-added tax plus all of the other taxes that we currently enjoy, well, not enjoy, but we currently have imposed on us, which gives us a total of 18% of GDP. If the economy then grows so that GDP becomes more than 18%, all things being equal, assuming that there isn't a parallel move between expenses and revenue, then that expansion, that growth, is likely to satisfy the same objective of as having increased taxes. Because 10% of 10 is 1, but 10% of 20 is 2. So if you grow the top line, if you can grow the economy, if you can grow GDP, then certainly the amount of taxes in terms of the number, the percentage, doesn't need to be increased. So we have to now start to think about internally, forget about the IMF, forget about those other guys. Why is it that we need to pay attention to what is being driven from an internal perspective? We need to be informed by the downgrades, the consecutive downgrades that we've been having over time, because part and parcel of the downgrades is because we are in this vicious cycle. When you get to the place where you are saying that you have a $1.3 billion in deficit, albeit in the midst of COVID, followed by $951 million in deficit, and before the 1.3, $800 million in deficit, you now start to have an idea that, hey, I am not in a position, I'm not in the best position to afford my standard of living. I'm not at a $3 billion expenditure level at all. My expenditure level is less than $3 billion, but that is where, based on the arrangement of the country, in many instances, very settled arrangements, that's where the cost structure is. The cost structure is $700 million in civil service salaries, $500 million in interest payments. That's $1.2 billion. Just that. $500 million for interest, $700 million for salaries and expenditures and related expenditure, $1.2 billion. Revenue is $2.2. So $1 billion is left. When you are assessed against that from a credit perspective, when there are shocks like COVID, when there are shocks like Dorian, it's likely for you to be in a position where you're going to enjoy another downgrade. And nobody enjoys a downgrade, but, you know, just playing with words here. It's likely that the downgrade is going to happen again. And then we must be informed, honestly, objectively. We have to come to the grips with the fact that where we are today, this very moment, the rollover risk for the Bahamas on its debt is very high. It's high. It's likely that persons out there are saying, well, you know, we don't want to lend you no more money. We have to contemplate too, because there's this argument, should we borrow foreign or should we borrow local? What capacity is left for the local banks? Are they at their levels in terms of their prudential norms? Not likely, but are they getting to the place where not just the prudential norms, but financial accounting standards is troubling them? And the reason the financial accounting standards are troubling them is because, going back to what we said before, the Bahamas government debt is now being rated junk and being downgraded. And that have implication for the carrying value, potentially, of certain assets by banks and financial institutions. And so they may be a little bit concerned about how much more can we take. What about the prudential norms? What about capital ratios? Are there sufficient other space to absorb these? So when we look at the totality of these things, we ask ourselves the question, are we securing in the first instance sufficient revenue from a tax perspective? And should there be more? Doesn't say increase VAT. Didn't say go get income tax or corporation tax. The question is the revenue space sufficient to do what is necessary for the government? Is it sufficient? Are we at a place where we now need to figure out how we can discourage consumption to some extent and kind of channel people more into more productive objectives? But also, going back to one of the principles of taxation, which is fairness or equity, do we really and truly need today to contemplate, to understand, to come to grips with the fact that those in the lower socioeconomic demographic is carrying a disproportionate burden of the tax regime? And does that therefore argue for something like income tax? Or does it argue for some other mechanism where we can keep a regressive tax system but reduce the burden? I can't think of it right offhand. I don't see it happening with a sales tax or a consumption tax regime beyond issues like zero and exempt, which we don't have today. But how do we get to that place where we better enable the government, this administration, to better afford the things which are necessary? And, you know, I know that there's a delicate balance here. And we can talk about that a little bit before we finish here. I know there's a delicate balance. And I know that it's not going to be an easy decision for this administration or the previous administration and the previous administration before. It is not easy. It's also not easy because there is the issue of the overall value proposition which certain tax measures represent for the country. At some stage, you cross that divide which is no longer low tax, regardless of whether income tax exists, yes or no. So the challenge is there. The struggle, I think, is real. But there is the question of whether at least certain segments of the society is under tax, and how can this fix via a more progressive approach? Individuals who make 60, 100,000, 150, 200,000, 300,000, 500,000 per year, but may proportionately pay as a percentage the same kind of tax as an individual who makes minimum wage. Is there that question to be asked? Is there that question to be asked? And then the further question is, how can that be fixed? Because if we agree and we accept that on one hand the government may need additional revenue, and if we agree and accept that some of the principles of taxation is that if you make this thing too high, like if you were to put VAT at 15 or 18%, persons are going to find ways of avoiding it or evading it. And you have a lot of tax fraud coming up. The higher the level, that usually happens. If we accept those, then we must now start thinking that maybe it's about broadening the canvas and seeing where there are additional options from additional segments of the economy, which has up to now not been met with some level of taxation. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm Hubert Edwards. And if you still wish to join me on the other side of the break, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or our text line 422-4796. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, we'll get right into some of the issues which creates a big challenge with moving the taxation bar up just a little bit more. Don't move. Come right back.
Hugs and happy smiles have been few and far between. Fresh Market knows just how important this holiday season is to everyone. We've made our list, we've checked them twice, all to ensure that your holiday meals are filled with fresh and delicious ingredients. Our produce departments are brimming with seasonal favorites. Our delis and bakeries are filled with holiday sweets and treats. And our grocery aisles are stocked with all your favorite essentials. It's the best time of the year, and we're giving you fresh for the holidays.
Helping out each other, family and everybody. It's a simple act of kindness with you, me, and RBC.
RBC wants to spread acts of kindness during this festive season. One simple act of kindness for our friends, co-workers, and communities can cause the brightest smile. Help a stranger, give a food basket, or call an elderly person. Share your stories at facebook.com/RBC Caribbean.
Acts of kindness, RBC.
I don't know if it's the way the sauce is prepared, but I could literally eat Balu's jerk all day. I mean, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's very addictive, and I encourage everyone to try it at least once. And I promise you, it won't be the last.
Big up Balu's jerk, the best authentic yard jerk chicken spot on the island. And that's the thing. Big up yourself, Balu's.
Balu's jerk is the best in town. Their meat and their sauce is on point. You gotta try.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Essentials. You know it's so essential. So serious. Time for the essentials.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9. Welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We're having a discussion around taxation and the extent to which the Bahamas as a country may actually be paying too little at the front end, that is. Because the low tax, as we discuss, may have implications at the back end. And ultimately, when this low tax situation terminates into debt, it is us, you and I, the taxpayer, that still will have to pick the bill up. So it may be a situation where the things look nice and rosy up front, but ultimately the cost is still being transmitted in an indirect way back to the taxpayer. And this too must form part of the conversation. It must form part of the analysis. What is the overall cost to the taxpayer? Because indirectly, if you had a situation where you needed to have an expenditure for $1 and you generate revenue of $1, you'd be good. You have zero. You generate revenue of $2, then you have a surplus of $1. And the extent that you are charged, let's assume that there are 10 persons in the country and they each charge 10 cents to get that $1, then, you know, let's say it's a 10% tax. If you do some more and it becomes 20 persons and you still charge 10%, then you get $2 and then you have the $1 surplus. But if you are charged 5% and it turns out that in the first year you only have 50 cents, then you end up with a deficit of 50 cents. The second year, you have 50 cents again, you end up with a deficit of 50 cents. Now you have a debt of $1 on which somebody is going to charge you interest of, let's say, 6%. So in the long run, you end up paying 5% in tax and 6% in debt. To repay the debt. Because ultimately, who pays the debt? It's the government. The government pays it. And where does the government get money from? The government gets money from the taxpayers. And it may not seem like that, but the way it works is that when the money is taken out to pay the debt, it creates the deficit. Because that money could have been spent someplace else. If I had no need to pay interest on a debt because there was no debt, then I would have no need to raise additional funds. I would have no need to borrow. I would have no need to spend in that direction, and it would be deployed in other productive areas. So, you know, whether you want it cheap on the front end or a little bit more expensive on the back end, it's a decision which will have to be made. That decision obviously will be made by the political directorate. With your concurrence, because the sentiment that you and I send in terms of paying more tax will help to inform that situation. We talked earlier about some of the principles of taxation, and I just want to go through a couple of things so that if persons are out there listening, that you kind of understand when you're looking at the tax regimes, what are some of the things that you must take into consideration? I mentioned this one before, the economic goals. That the primary goal of the national tax system is to generate revenue to pay for the expenditure of the government at all levels. When you look at taxation, you need to consider whether it's convenience. It's convenient. Look at the convenience of the tax. So it should be easy to pay. You shouldn't be charging me tax and I have to bend over backwards just to make the payment. It becomes difficult. So that is one of the elements. Cost effective. So the government shouldn't be levying $1 worth of tax on you and have to spend $1.50 to collect it. That would be an inefficient system. It's not cost effective. Stability, so the laws around taxation should be relatively stable. They shouldn't be changing 1 year to the next. 1 year we up, 1 year we down. It should be relatively stable. And so you want to have kind of broad and general systemic tax reforms rather than, you know, kind of jerky changes from time to time. And that is, I think, the point that we are at really right now, where we do that in such a way that we can create smooth out the transition from one administration to the next, from 1 year to the next, from one decade to the next, and the laws remain relatively stable. Clarity, the law should be and the regulation should be well understood, and they should be simple, so the regular Joe, the man on the street, should be able to understand, all things being equal, very easy, maybe with a little bit of explanation from somebody, but it shouldn't be rocket science. Should be able to understand it. The regime is going to need ease of administration and compliance. It should be easy to comply with, and the administration shouldn't be overburdensome. Economic efficiency, right? So it should not affect the allocation of resources, or it shouldn't discriminate against one group versus the other based on, the way it is levied. Obviously, there are exceptions to all of these rules, because I may decide that I want to grow a particular segment of the economy, a particular industry. And so I may put in taxation rules which could be seen as being discriminatory to another sector. But there is a broader national objective, and that's what is designed. And so government can do anything. Parliament is sovereign. Parliament can pass that type of a discriminatory taxation. Not discriminatory in real time, but maybe interpreted as that. But it's designed to further a particular public policy. That's kind of pretty much what I'm saying. So in real terms, it shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't pass a tax which automatically robs me of the ability to further my entrepreneurial desire, or to take some stuff from one grouping and just shove it over to another grouping. The allocation of resources should not be significantly interrupted by that. So that's one of the principles which need to be borne in mind. Benefit principle. What transaction the government is going to undertake and who will pay, who will benefit? I mean, at the end of the day, the government must know, you know, what it is going to spend on, who is going to be benefit. So when the government spends on road, it's for everybody in general. When it spends on school, it's for the general education of the country, but obviously it's going to impact students and how they're going to pay for that. Are the students going to be charged a fee? Well, the parents, is there going to be a education tax charted for that? Is there going to be a tax charted for fixing the roads and so on and so forth? Those are things which need to be taken into consideration. An ability to pay is also a big one. So the tax burden should be distributed, should be fairly and equitably distributed amongst individuals according to the capacity to pay. So you shouldn't be taxing me too much when I can't pay it, and then you leave some other individuals who have greater capacity to pay but does not receive a tax burden in that particular direction. We have a caller on the line. Caller. We have a caller here. Okay. So how do we deal with these matters? How do we get to the situation where we now start to think about where are we going with our circumstance? Caller, I can see you. We're just waiting to be able to acknowledge you and to bring you on the air. So if you wish to hold on for a bit, I'll get to you in a short minute. There's no question that there is a growing deficit in infrastructure or infrastructure investment. If you look at the budget over the last 5 or so years, one of the things that you will notice is that capital expenditure has always been reduced. And when we come towards the end of the year, even the amount which has been allocated has again been reduced such that, you know, it is used in a way to manage the deficit. We have a caller. Go ahead. You're on Guardian Radio. Go ahead, caller. No. So because we have this deficit, And because we have this increasing, consistently increasing national debt, one colleague said to me recently, it's like we're running out of runway. If you run out of runway in a plane analogy, then it wouldn't be sufficient to build up the speed and the momentum in order to take off. So we have to be careful for that. The colleague also talked about, let's take, for example, what are some of the important catalysts which are needed in, say, a family island if we want to drive growth and development in those areas. And he highlighted three things: lighted airports, proper docks, well-equipped clinics. Lighted airports, proper docks, well-equipped clinics. And he sees these as catalysts for growth and development. And I agree. These are things which, if an individual is going to be in an area, they start to thinking, what's our access to healthcare? How do we get equipment and plant in there at a cost-effective way if we don't have proper dockage and that sort of a thing? And if we need to get people in and out, are we going to be limited to just daytime travel by airplane? Can we get persons in there at night? If there's an emergency and someone wants to come out, we have seen incidents where, in a medical emergency, persons took risks and end up with, causing accident, airplane crash, because there was no other way of doing it. So if we want to see these things in place, then we must understand that we need additional revenue in order to facilitate these things, in order for them to grow. It cannot be that we expect that there is going to be growth and development, there is going to be improvement in infrastructure, there is going to be greater facilitation when there isn't the revenue. And so right now, if we want to see improvement in those general areas, we definitely will have to get to the place where we have greater revenue, or we reduce expenditures in other areas and put the revenue into the capital expenditure, which is going to be investment for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So one of the major part of the conversations which need to be had really is an increase in tax. If we were to increase tax in different areas, whether it's import duty, whatsoever it is, does that adversely impact the economy? Is that going to cause a slowdown or a curtailment or retrenchment in the economy? That's something which needs to be looked at, and looked at very carefully as we contemplate the overall reform of the tax regime. And it really is a requirement. There's no question that we are at a crossroad which calls for fundamental reforms, important reforms, broad-based reforms. Because without that, I believe that, any administration in place is going to be significantly handicapped in making decisions which are really not properly informed, totally informed. It's really a case where we have to start to think about how do we get to that place where we are going to be better off in the circumstance. We have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead. You are on Guardian Radio.
Yes.
Caller, go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Edwards.
Hey, how you doing, 52?
Yeah, I'm all right. I always listen to you, right? And so I just like you to have me on. I think I'd spoken to Lang about this, and I'd asked him some questions. But, this is what, of course I agree with you about the regressive tax, right? But, this is all a global construct designed to suck up wealth and to induce poverty. So I don't know if people... this is the part of the New World Order, but I just wanted to dwell on my situation as far as being a small businessman, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I'm noticing is, and this is the problem that I have, when I go to the store locally, I pay VAT, right? And what I've noticed is some of the suppliers are telling me, because of the price of the container shipments and et cetera, and the whole cascade of events from the supply chain, right? Well, what they're saying is that the people charging them $10 for every item. So let's say I buy a thread, right, because I do upholstery, right? The thread went from, like, maybe $23 to, like, $30.
Mm-hmm.
So the piping went from, like, from $20 to, like, $30. And so I look at all of these different price ranges. I send people out to buy materials and stuff to do the work. They pay VAT. And I'm looking at what I am getting in return as a small business person. Nothing. So because I don't make more than $100,000 a year, I guess they're saying I can't charge VAT. But what I'm looking at is how regressive it is, because I'm getting nothing. I'm not even getting services from the government that I should be getting. You know, I don't mind paying tax, because if you ask people about tax increase and all that, I guess we'll get a different answer according to the age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I don't mind paying taxes. You see what I'm saying? Once I could see something tangible or something in return. So I'm looking at this as being counterintuitive to the small businessman, because my brother runs a construction company and he makes money. So what happens is then he's able to, reclaim or be compensated by the government.
Yeah, he's able to get.
He has credits. A higher CPA and do all that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very regressive and it's frustrating for me. But to me, I'm a type of person, I work with my hands, so I can't even afford, you know what I mean, to get it to hurt my hands. So I don't think the government should be mixed up in how much money I make. They call and ask him, but how much money? When I look at it, you don't want to know what they're doing with our money.
You're
trying to squeeze a small businessman, how much they making with a year and all
right,
that.
Don't
concern them, man.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this here. This is all a construct to suck up wealth and induce poverty and create economic slaves, man. This is why you see when they lend you more money, the money goals increase the interest rate. So that's the terminology before you use, the money goals. Have a good night.
Have a good night, man. You take care. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian Radio.
Hey, good night, Hubert. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Excellent. Very, very exceptional program you have on tonight. I'd like to touch on something that 52 mentioned just now. And if you listen to a lot of the persons in the public domain, there's two pivotal questions that always seem to come to bear. One of those questions has always been, seeing that the tax, this VAT tax, is a highly regressive tax, where's the conversation as it pertains to the small man actually getting an annual tax rebate based upon the taxes that they pay in this country? There seems to be no conversation as it pertains to the small man recouping some of the monies that they spend, even right now as the breadbasket items are now being taxed. Where's the incentives for the small man to recoup some of the monies that they spend in taxes?
Well,
it just seems as if certain quarters of our economy are getting these breaks and these tax incentives and everything, but the small man is always left out in the cold.
Yeah,
when are we going to get ours?
On balance, we made the argument, so the individual who makes less than 100,000 doesn't register for VAT or have the option of not registering. But you have to factor in that that individual is also avoiding certain costs. You'd have to put systems in place. You'd have to put accounting measures. You would have to have pricing mechanism. And so, it's a give and take. I don't know if it's equal or it's going to be, set off exactly, but it's about give and take. But I take the point that, at the end of the day, though, the argument that I would want to leave with most persons is, yes, there may be challenges with whatsoever exists, but there is also further challenges because of the lack of sufficiency of the total tax pie which the government has to work with.
Well, I can accept that, Hubert. I think in my closing statement, I would like to say perhaps this is an avenue if it has never been considered. Some of these factors need to be considered because right now as it stands, there's still even a certain quarter in our population that hardly pays any tax. However, they get the benefits of the taxpayer. As if they do pay tax when they don't really pay tax.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But we the taxpayers, have to suffer the burden.
Okay.
So I think all this stuff has got to be discussed, revamped. I think new people have to come around the table and try create a new tax regime where the small man finally benefits from this country and not just paying the taxes. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you so much. You know, if we're going to be honest and objective, big man always benefit more from taxation. It's just the nature of the beast. The individual who has the ability to run companies, to employ accountants, to employ lawyers, and that sort of thing, they generally are going to benefit more. No matter how you slice it, no matter how progressive the system is, the small man is always going to be crying as far as taxation is concerned. So let's, in the next couple of minutes that we have, ask a couple of questions. Why is it so difficult for us to look at some of the issues here? Why is it difficult for us to really consider a broad-based taxation reform? And this doesn't mean introduction of income tax. The truth is, there is at least from my perspective, there's a lot of political capital wrapped up in this whole thing. A lot of political capital is at risk. My position, though, on this is, you know, how do you reassess this? How do you look to see what may be lost and what can be gained in the short term, in the immediate term, in the short term, and in the long term, in terms of as a compensatory effect? Because ultimately, I believe that as a country, we'll have to come to grapple with it. But I also recognize that, you know, from a political perspective, the administration that pushes this the furthest is likely to be burnt. And that is, in my mind, creating some important tensions as to how far we want to go with it. But I think we are at a place where we have to have a very mature conversation on this whole thing. And this conversation, it must be broad, it must be deep, it must be fundamental, and it must be internal looking in the first instance. Of course, it will have to contemplate the external pressures or the external influences. But we have to start thinking about what internally ought to drive us to find the food for ourselves, to make sure that that food is good for us, that we don't have anything in there which we are allergic to, and that it is good for our bodies. So is time on our side? Maybe, maybe not. Where are we exactly with our debt? Where are we with refunding? But I really believe that, you know, waiting too long will potentially hurt the country, may potentially hurt a administration, may potentially hurt anyone who has anything to do with it. And the reason for that is because the owning of stuff shifts within the political arena. So everything that the FNM last administration did up to now, they're likely to own that until we get to the first PLP budget. And once that happens, then persons tend to view that as a shift and you now own it. So there is a window, I believe, in which these conversations should at least start happening, such that the ownership, quote-unquote ownership, does not complicate the decision-making, or at least the decision to have the conversation. So there's a need, there's a clear need for a studied reform. We know that there have been previous reports done. We know that there have been previous studies. Some of them are work in progress, incomplete. There is certainly a need for a very clear white paper to be done on this whole issue of taxation, which looks right across the board at the reforms which are necessary, taking into account our concession regime. Are we giving up too much? Are we not taxing enough? Is our tax effort at the right level? Are we using sufficient of our tax capacity? Can we find a way to put to drive some sort of a stake into this beast of a debt by taking in at the front end more in taxes? Where are we? So there are some big concerns. The rollover risk, I think, is a big concern. Lenders may potentially curtail, or they may ask for higher interest rate because they've been downgraded. Local finding, we talk about the bank and the prudential norms and whether or not that gives us a clear path to getting stuff. We have to consider how these downgrades factor in it. And if we do nothing, whether or not there is going to be still the potential for further downgrade. So how early should we move? Is there a comprehensive fix? What should be the focus? What is in the best interest of the Bahamas at this point in time? How do we address the cultural frictions that is likely to be raised with having discussion around taxes? And is there any way out, any path outside of increased taxes, greater facilitation, and spending which will secure growth? Do we have a way out? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to leave it there. As we always say to you, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials. I want to say walk good, be good, one love, and Ubuntu.